This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Mango Mania returns for its 21st year this weekend as the Great Pine Island Chamber of Commerce puts on the annual event in Cape Coral. In the second half of our show today, we'll talk with the 2017 Mango Mania Queen and the author of a book dedicated to mangoes who can answer every question you've ever had about this tropical fruit. But first, the Americans with Disabilities Act was a landmark piece of legislation that opened doors figuratively and literally for the disabled among us to enter into a life that they'd previously not known, a life in which a person using a wheelchair might rarely see a ramp, a life in which people with service animals could be denied entry into stores or denied a lease on an apartment. Now, 27 years later, the ADA is as much part of the fabric of American life as anything else. And while it may not be perfect, it's better than just a few decades ago. Today on the program, we're joined by Michael Pierce. He's an ADA advocate with the Center for Independent Living Gulf Coast. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks, Julie.
Also with us today is Renee Sluzales. She's the director of the Center for Independent Living Gulf Coast. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
We're talking about the ADA on its 27th anniversary. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. First, Michael Pierce, I want to begin by asking you for some direction for our conversation today. You and I spoke before the show, and I can see as we're sitting in front of each other that you're blind. Is it rude to ask someone about their disability?
No. In fact, I think most people with disabilities would prefer somebody be open about it and ask them a question rather than doing something that may be uncomfortable or to help them be more accessible for them. So definitely, I think we'd much prefer that somebody has a question about our disability, ask us.
Make it open and just
absolutely
a piece of conversation instead of just ignoring it, acting like it's not
correct
there. What terms should people use with a visual disability? Is blind an okay word? There's a lot of different don't want to offend people words.
Well, yes. Blind usually means you have very little or no vision. Somebody who may have a little more usable vision, you could call them visually impaired. But the main point is when you're talking to someone or about someone with a visual disability is to put the person first ahead of their disability. So I wouldn't be a blind person. I would be a person who is blind. I wouldn't be a visually impaired person. I would be a person who is visually impaired. You always put the person ahead of their disability. Same way to say I am not a disabled person. You can have disabled cars, but you don't have disabled people. You would say a person with a disability. You put the person first.
Yeah. And you know, when you're not dealing with it yourself in your own personal life, you just kind of don't know how to approach. And
sure,
the last thing anybody really wants to do is say something that would be offensive. And when it comes to mobility issues, Renee, how are people addressed in that way?
Once again, just as Michael shared, it's a person with a disability, and you can reference their disability after you have acknowledged them as a person. So a person who uses a wheelchair or a person who uses a walker.
Yeah, like you wouldn't just walk up to someone who has red hair and lead with red hair.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
They're a human being, correct? First of all, first and foremost. So, Michael, tell me about what you remember about life in Southwest Florida before the ADA was signed 27 years ago.
Well, it was much more complicated, although I have to say that Lee County itself is kind of, and we talk about this many times when we talk to people from other counties in Florida, Lee County is kind of the gold standard for states as for counties in Florida as far as disabilities. The reason I moved to Lee County 22 years ago from Charlotte County is because already 22 years ago, Lee County had a full-blown paratransit system for people with disabilities, a door-to-door service, and no other county close by. In fact, I believe we're the only full-blown paratransit system between Tampa and Miami. So this is a headquarters. We also have had a disability sheltering program here in place for almost 20 years. We have other counties coming to us using our transportation system and our disability sheltering system with the Emergency Operations Center as guidelines to create their own. So this County has always been very progressive for services with for people with disabilities. So that's the reason I came here, and I think that's a reason a lot of people settle in Lee County who have disabilities, because there's a lot of services to offer them.
Even as far back as 22 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. They started early. A lot of people are just now starting to catch up from other counties. And in fact, a couple of counties and a city here in our area have gotten sued by the federal government, because after all these years, now almost 27 years since it was signed into law, there are many cities and counties in our area that are still not compliant with ADA regulations. So the federal government does come and sneak in and check on them. And if they find that they're not being compliant with the standard ADA regulations, a city or a county can have a lot of problems, and they have.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting that Lee County was kind of ahead of it, you know, that
yes.
far back.
Yes.
So Renee Suzales, I want to ask you, as the director for the Center for Independent Living in the Gulf Coast, who else is in the population of people with disabilities in Southwest Florida? Obviously, we're speaking with Michael, who is blind, and then do we have a deaf community? I mean, who all is included in what's considered a person with a disability?
Yes, indeed. We do have the deaf community as well. We have people with intellectual disabilities, and we have people who have physical disabilities. So we have a variety of different types of disabilities that are served by our organization.
Mm-hmm. And then also veterans, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are there any kind of like subcultures within the disabled community that people might kind of be surprised to learn about?
Well, I think the deaf community is sort of a subculture of the disability community. They tend to view themselves as not having a disability and sort of have a different standpoint on that. So they tend to be a little bit different in the disability community than the, you know, traditional person who is visually impaired or blind or a person who has a physical disability or even with a person who has an intellectual disability.
Mm-hmm. So, it's really interesting. And plus the needs that somebody with a hearing problem is very different. I mean, the needs across the spectrum of disabilities is so varied. And that's all handled within your organization as far as teaching people how to deal with
no,
navigating?
They kind of like to have to be segregated is probably not a good word, but they kind of like to have they feel that their situation is so different from others with disabilities that they have their own center here called the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Center. And obviously we work closely with them. I do a lot of work with them. If we have a consumer who comes in, I've done referrals to them. Also, we use their services, though. If we have a deaf person, a person who is deaf at one of our events or one wants to take one of our classes, we do contact them and bring in a deaf interpreter so that person can participate fully in what we do. But most of them do prefer to be around their own people, and they feel it helps them to have people around them who can sign with them and communicate with them. So they seem to be more comfortable. But obviously, we would make that accommodation anytime we have a consumer come in who needs services.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier that Lee County is kind of the gold standard when mm-hmm. it comes to service for the disabilities, Lee County and Fort Myers. Tell me about how they're doing that. You mentioned in the phone conversation we had earlier about an ADA advisory board. What mm-hmm. is that?
It's been around for a little over 20 years. I'm the vice chair of the ADA advisory board. What it is a group of people, many of them with disabilities, in all walks of life in our county, who serve people with disabilities in some aspect. Many of them are ADA coordinators for our county and all the cities in our area. Each county and city in our area is required to have an ADA coordinator to make sure they're working on a plan to make sure their city or county is fully accessible. That has to be updated all the time for the feds when they come down to inspect. Many of them belong to the council. We have a lot of business people that do. We do a lot of work with small business and big business people that want to learn how they can make their businesses more accessible for people with disabilities. Then there's just what we call concerned citizens, people who want to do something to help others in the community with disabilities and come to our meetings and want to participate and see if they can help in some way. We do inspections to go out and actually, if somebody files a complaint that, about a barrier, if it, you know, somebody in a wheelchair can't get over a ramp or couldn't get in a door or they don't have any disability parking spaces or restrooms, they can file a complaint with us. We inspect it and we strongly encourage people to repair those things and make sure they're not putting up barriers for customers or visitors with disabilities. And we do a lot of that there. But also we look at our main goal as being an education source to help people understand the needs of people with disabilities and also to understand the laws that protect people with disabilities in the ADA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is it can be very confusing because
yes.
I've looked online and that is not a fun website to try to navigate.
No. Well, you have to remember the Department of Justice website is all written by attorneys. So a lot of times for the average person to get in there and try to understand the points they're making, it can be very difficult. So we try to act as that intermediate tool where somebody says, I don't understand what this regulation means. And then perhaps we can, as an ADA advocate, we can explain to them in a way that it makes it easier for them to understand.
Kind of like a personal Cliff's Notes for
sure.
The ADA website.
That's a good way to put it.
Because that I mean, I tried to read that thing and I had no idea what they were talking about. I did another story a while back regarding this. So and when we were talking on the phone also, you mentioned that there are a lot more people in our area that do have disabilities.
Yes. The reason that is because so many people come down here to retire. A lot of people come here to get out of the winters, cold winters up north. Snow is very difficult for people in walkers and wheelchairs. All of those things contribute. We have a lot of seniors here, a lot of retired military. Yes, absolutely. They come down here. In fact, the statistics I heard most recently that I thought was very interesting is one in 14 residences in Fort Myers, one in 14 has at least one person with a disability living there. So we have a large number here of people with disabilities. So I think that also helped to Lee County and Fort Myers to understand that a lot of their citizens are people with disabilities and they need to be aware of the services they need.
It's really enlightening and nice to learn that, you know, as long ago as 22 years ago, Fort Myers and Lee County was already ahead of the game and trying to make things accessible and having that paratransit available. I think that's really remarkable and it's good to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the Americans with Disabilities Act guarantees equal treatment, accessibility, among other things, but sometimes people can take advantage of some of those protections. And one of the issues that's come up a lot in the news is people passing off comfort dogs and as service animals. And I wanted to know, do you hear a lot about that? Renee, do you hear a lot about that?
We do. We receive a lot of calls with questions and concerns. Again, with so many snowbirds coming in and out of the state, we also get a lot of out-of-state calls as people are looking to come to Florida either to move or to visit for the winter months. And so Michael here takes almost every single call. Obviously, he has a lot of personal experience with service animals. And so he's very eloquent in the way that he is able to help educate, you know, people about the differences.
Yeah. And Michael, I noticed that you have Addie here with us today. And that this is your service animal.
Yeah. Well, actually, in 2011, the ADA reversed its decision and they're no longer service animals. Now they put the name back to service dogs. Don't ask me why. But if you go back and look at the update from 2011, we're not going to call them service animals anymore. Now we're just going to call them service dogs.
Wow. So,
well, the reason that they changed that back was because many people were using all kinds of animals.
Well, I've heard of service pigs.
Service
exactly.
Turkeys. There was a service turkey on a plane that the airline actually let this guy bring it on an airplane, claimed to do that it was his comfort turkey.
Okay, I've been on a turkey farm and they are not the brightest
animals.
They're not animals.
Comfortable. No.
I don't mean to offend turkey fans, but no. So, yeah, wow. But I've heard of pigs and I've heard of the service horses, like the miniature horses.
Now, those are allowed by the government. They're pygmy horses because they actually claim that they're just as smart as the dog and in some cases they may be easier for the person to use. But They're still very rare. I've been in this business for over 10 years, and I've never met one. I've never seen one. So I know they exist, and they are allowed under the ADA to have a pygmy horse that is trained. But the key word is the training of the animal, not what it is.
Yeah. And so could you explain for listeners who might not otherwise know, what's the difference between a comfort animal and a service dog?
And in one word, it's training. A comfort animal, the other name that's commonly used, is an emotional support pet. Either one. Those have no training. They are there to comfort you, yes, but they have no training to do that. They're just there to look cute, and you can hold them close. And the difference is training. Here's this will show you the difference, because under the ADA, as you know, disabled veterans are allowed to have a PTSD dog. The difference is it comforts them when it realizes they're having an episode. So it does have training. It is trained to react to them having a problem, emotional problem. So those dogs are trained, and they are trained to provide a specific purpose for that person, to comfort them, where an emotional support pet has no training whatsoever. We sometimes call them purse dogs, the mm-hmm. little dogs you see with the ladies in the shopping cart in the grocery store with a little tiny vest on that they probably bought online. The dog is not trained to do anything, which is why so many of them bark and do bad things.
And then what happens when you are navigating, for example, that same shopping aisle, and you have a Yippie Mick Chihuahua there barking at Addie?
It can be distracting for her. It can be very distracting. She's trained not to pay attention, but it still is a distraction. And the last thing, which is the same reason if she's working with me, if she's actually guiding me, that's the time when you don't want to touch or even speak to a working dog. And obviously for a dog, another dog barking or growling can be a great distraction. And anybody using a service dog, if that happens, they could get hurt.
Yeah, it puts you in danger.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, there you have the regulations that the ADA put forward, that a business or shop owner can't ask questions about someone when they come in with these kinds of dogs.
Well,
so what are
they can ask two questions?
Okay, what are those questions?
There's only two questions they're allowed to ask. One, do you have that dog because you have a disability? But you do not have to state what your disability is. The second question is, here's the key one. This is the key one to help you understand about service dogs. What specific task was this dog trained for because of your disability? So they have to be able to answer and say what specific task it was trained to do. And that's where you can catch people with an emotional support pet, where you can ask them that question. They say, well, I don't know. It's to make me feel good. Well, the dog isn't trained to do anything.
And what would be the response then from a veteran who has a dog that's trained to handle PTSD?
And he would say, this dog was trained to help me with my PTSD, or trained to relax me if I have an episode. And that dog's trained. In fact, the school that Addie comes from up in Bradenton, Southeastern Guide Dogs, has a branch just for veterans and their needs. It's called Pause for Patriots. Mm-hmm. And these guys can go up there, and ladies, there are plenty of lady vets up there too, who can get a PTSD dog or any other dog specifically trained for their disability, whether they're an amputee or they have emotional issues from battle. All of those things can be taken into consideration in a dog trained to provide help for them. So that's a very important part of the school.
And this is one of the bigger issues that I've been hearing about repeatedly, and thus the reason that I went on the ADA website to try to figure it out. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask Renee Sluzales, what kind of advice does the Center for Independent Living give to individuals or business owners who are concerned about this? Is there some sort of a handout or any kind of like advice that you give to people?
Well, we encourage business owners to reach out to the Center for Independent Living so that we can help provide that guidance to them on those very specific questions that they can ask. And even if a person has a service dog and has declared it as such and has responded that the service dog provides a specific task, if that dog is still disruptive in any way, the business owner does still have the right to ask the animal to be removed. So again, it's not something where people with disabilities are looking to take advantage of the opportunity to bring an animal to different locations where they may be going, it is obviously a matter of a need that that service animal is providing a service for. And but again, an animal is an animal. And if they do misbehave, if they have accidents, if they growl, they bark, if they jump on the table, that's also a very good indicator that that's a fake service animal, because oftentimes, again, as Michael indicated, people are able to purchase vests online that say, I'm a service animal. And they do that. And I will be honest with you, I think you see that more of that in Florida than in other states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I've seen it an awful lot, and I know I've done a lot of stories on it. We are talking about the 27th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Now, another issue that we talked about on the phone before the show, Michael, is the practice of attorneys who threaten to file complaints against businesses for Americans with Disabilities Act infractions. Mm-hmm. Tell me about this practice.
Well, it unfortunately, there have been hundreds of those. On our ADA council, we call it drive-by lawsuits, because frequently somebody will come in, sometimes accompanied by a person with a disability who will be kind of their token disability person, who will quickly run through the small business or the store, when I say run, or roll through in their wheelchair or whatever. This attorney will write down maybe one or two minor infractions and then go file a suit in federal court. And then comes back a day or two later or calls the business owner and says, oh, well, you know, this is going to cost you at least $10,000 if you answer this suit and fight it. So, you know, you're better off. Why don't you just give me $5,000 to forget the whole thing and I won't pursue this. And this has happened. It happens a lot in South Florida, from Miami over here to our coast. Our ADA council has done a lot of work as well in Naples and some of the surrounding counties. Those people seem to just drive through and they'll do a whole string of them. And we found one last week that was, ironically enough, my chairman was telling me about. With a young person, 11 years old, filed an ADA suit, and when they checked back and looked at what kind of business it was a liquor store in the evening. And so we kind of called up the attorney and said, wait a minute, you're telling me that a disabled 11-year-old child was perusing a liquor store and had an accessibility problem? So needless to say, they backed off of that claim real quick.
But so you're saying that attorneys are going into stores, they're taking somebody with them that is disabled in one way or another, and then saying, oh, I found this infraction, I'm filing this suit, but I will make it go away if you, business owner, give me money. Is that legal?
I think it's we've been discussing that it is legal, but we think our next position and our next procedure we're talking about doing is to contact the State Bar Association. We feel even though it may be right on the edge of legality, we're pretty sure it would fall under being unethical. So perhaps if we appeal to our State Bar Association, they may be able to step in and make this an unethical thing for lawyers to do in this state, which would be a wonderful thing.
I don't want to make a big judgment call here, but I think a service turkey could figure out that that's not ethical. I mean, and do you think that kind of stems from people just not having adequate information in front of them and maybe not knowing what their recourse is?
Yeah, they do. So I'm sure maybe a lot of these attorneys think they're helping people with disabilities, but they're not. We go in, and what we do is for free. We go in, when I say our inspectors for our ADA board, upon request, we go in and do an inspection and a checklist, so to speak, of what infractions they may have so they can put them right, so they don't have these people coming in and trying to make money off of them. And this service is free to any business person who wants it, and we can kind of put them on the right path so they don't have to worry about these drive-by lawsuits. And that, at the same time, makes their business more accessible for people with disabilities who want to use their business.
All right. We have a call coming in from Kristen in Venice. Kristen, what question would you like to ask?
Hi. My question is about PTSD service dogs for those that are not veterans. I'm actually not a veteran. I'm trying to fund that. and just wondering how, what are the resources to try to get a service dog not being a veteran?
Oh, you don't have to be a veteran. That's just that one program. Many dog training schools in the country offer train dogs for every kind of disability. Obviously, some of them are free, like our school here for blind people and for veterans. But many schools offer those services. And some schools will even help you train your puppy to become a PTSD dog. It's not just for veterans. It's just there's not as many training sites for PTSD dogs as there are for civilians. As there's a lot fewer for civilians than there are for veterans. But it still qualifies. If you can, you can also train a dog yourself if you have the wherewithal and understand about dog training. Some people, and it's in the ADA, you can train your own service dog. The training counts, but the important thing is the dog providing that service that you need to help you with your disability? And they're pretty open about how to do it. They just want to make sure the dog is safe and that it is helping you with that need.
And Kristen, does that answer your question?
A little bit. I guess because I am working on getting a service dog, it's just been very difficult to find the resources for that. So, because I'm not a veteran,
Renee, what how do people navigate that? What are the steps that you need to take? And Kristen, I'm gonna have that have you get that answer off the phone. But I want to thank you for your question. So when somebody walks in the door, for example, at the Independent Living Center, what do they do first?
Well, first of all, we meet with them to discuss what their needs are and what they're looking for the service animal to do. And then we connect them with different types of trainings that are available. As Michael said, there's multiple different programs alone here in Florida that can help provide that training to animals, service dogs. So we would work with them to then identify who would be the best place to reach out to see about that. But I'm wondering if her real question is, how do I find financial funding for that? Because, of course, it is an expense. And so, again, in that case, our agency, we don't have any dollars to assist with that. But we can help that person maybe identify church organizations or Kiwanis clubs or things of that nature to help assist with them and maybe doing a fundraising goal to help be able to purchase a trained service animal.
So yeah, and just maybe point in the right direction for different resources.
Exactly.
Because you've already talked with all of them and you already know
Correct.
All those people. So I wanted to ask, a lot of people associate ADA with employment, education, and access, but this month you're moving the focus to recreational activities with a new workout program. Can you tell me a little about that?
I can. We're super excited. It's the first initiative here in our area where we have joined in partnership with Around the Clock Fitness, the one on Boy Scout here in Fort Myers, to develop a adaptive fitness challenge. And because this is our first annual event of this nature, we have been working with individuals from our organization who have been in training for about 5 weeks now with the guidance of the gym and with one of our staff members present as well in preparation for this new fitness challenge that we will be having on July 29th at Around the Clock Fitness on Boy Scout. And we are still looking for people with disabilities who are interested in getting in on the action.
So I understand there's some CrossFit elements involved in this too.
There are. CrossFit, for those of you who don't know or aren't gym enthusiasts, as I'm not.
I'm so not. I've seen videos of these CrossFit people. I'm like, wow, they are dedicated.
They are hardcore.
I mean, hardcore.
People.
So when you know, you're thinking, here's a person who's dealing with a disability and they're going to do that, that's quite the challenge to take on.
It is. And how we sort of assimilated this was CrossFit is all about functional activities. If you sort of look up CrossFit, and Google it will talk about the different types of things like tire flipping and dragging things. And those are sort of like everyday activities that people do tend to do. And so we sort of made that leap from that world to the adaptive fitness challenge for people with disabilities to sort of do the same thing, to help people with disabilities to be able to gain maybe more strength and endurance and mobility to do everyday things, like maybe even just lifting up a laundry basket from the floor up onto their lap if they happen to be a wheelchair user. Or, again, reaching. You're talking about stretching and movement and being able to reach up to upper cabinets to retrieve an item that you're trying to get. Or dragging things with your wheelchair. Or, you know, also stability for people who might have some balance concerns.
It sounds like a good program, too. I mean, but you just don't really think of a gym rat.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
You don't see that. But, I mean, getting that kind of training and a little bit of musculature, like just working on that and the stretching, like you said, I think is – and you're still looking for people to join, correct?
We are. We still have registration. It's open until July 17th. We're also still looking for volunteers who would like to be there on the day of the event and help support a person with a disability that is going to be an athlete for the day. And we're also looking for sponsors, as our real goal is to raise around $5,000 to be able to support and sponsor 10 individuals with disabilities to have a year-long gym membership at Around the Clock Fitness so that they can hopefully become the gym enthusiasts and increase their mobility and stamina and decrease their perhaps needs on their caregivers and just to increase their independence.
All right. And that sounds like a good program, but we're going to have to leave it there for now. But I do want to thank our guests, Michael Pierce and Renee Sluzales from the Center for Independent Living Gulf Coast. Thank you both so much for being here today. And we have links to the event later this month for people interested in learning more. You can go to WGCUnews.org and click on the Gulf Coast Live tab. You'll find today's story and links within that text to the event and registration. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Coming up, raw mango slices, mango jam, maybe some Thai-influenced mango and sticky rice. How do you eat your mango? Coming up, we're diving into Mango Mania and talking about the 21st annual Tropical Fruit Festival happening this weekend. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.